This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. And the little car is a hero today. It's been a hero all week. It's actually started all week. Every day I get in my car, I say, little car, now's your chance to be a hero. So I haven't said an episode number in a long time, I think. It's actually 328, I think, today. Episode 328. Don't know when to quit. So it's been a good week. We have gotten rain. But I looked on the weather thing. When was it? Yesterday afternoon? It was like 75 degrees. We're in July, and it's 75 degrees. Normally, we're in the 90s by now. So, you know, it's hard to complain. Now, we've had a ton of rain. I mean, everything is just sopping wet. But that's a whole lot better than California is. So, you know, it's got to be murder, though, on the people who are trying to run construction companies. I mean, this is just... I was talking to a coworker today, and she was saying that her husband called her and said, yeah, I'm starting to get depressed because I guess he's in the construction business. And, you know, with the kind of rain we've been having, it's just so hard to hold any kind of a construction schedule. So, you know, while we are grateful and thankful that we have water pouring out of the skies on us, it's rained a lot around here in the last couple of weeks. We've got a little let up now, but the skies are all overcast and it's still sprinkling. And so anyways, but today was the big day. I had working on this little expert system, and I had gone through, I decided about a month ago, a little over a month ago, that our approach wasn't good enough. And so in between working on some other things, I started reanalyzing, reworking, you know, building another way to do, actually two other ways to do it on top of each other. The whole time I'm just going, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, oh Jesus, help me not to waste the company's money. You know, and so I had a good foundation, I knew that, so I built one story on it, and that was better, I thought, yeah, and then it just kept, this little whisper just keeps saying, yeah, but you could go to that tag functionality, and so I just thought, you know what, we're doing it, and so I built the second story on it, and today was the first time that I showed it to the end users, a lady and her assistant, the lady who's the manager there and her assistant manager, not just her assistant manager kind of showed it to them today. We went through the stuff and they got it. They understood because it really is designed for the way they think about the data. And so we were just moving through stuff and saying, okay, what does this look like? Yeah, that's good, that's good. Yep. And so it was good. We were pretty productive today. We plowed through a lot of stuff. And so I think another couple of sessions and we'll have that part of the analysis done. Unfortunately, everybody's going on vacation next week and the week after that, so that's okay. We'll figure out a way to kind of work our way around that. But now I'm setting up a meeting with the team, the management team for this project. I'm going to show them what I've done, describe it to them. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they get it less than the two ladies I showed it to today, because they don't work in that department, so they don't really understand the data. But I think I can explain it well enough that they understand what I'm doing. They just won't understand the reason that we're doing the things that we're doing. So all in all, though, it was good. We had a very productive meeting today, and, you know, it was good. So that's good. That's good. I did not waste the company's time for an entire month. Well, parts of months. Woo! There was a car coming up on my tail end there that was sliding over, and I wasn't sure that he was going to get slid over fast enough. So I put my little head back against the headrest in case there was going to be a crash. But he got over when he needed to get over. So I don't know what would happen if my car would be hit again, because it's already been totaled once. So I don't think they would total it again. Maybe I could just get money for pain and suffering. Anyways, the writing is going well. We actually have a thing called Clue Pursuit. It's a locked room mystery. And we're going and doing the medium hard one. My son-in-law wanted to do the hard one. He thought, oh, let's just go for the hard one. It's like, no, let's not embarrass ourselves. Let's start with the medium hard. We're supposed to get it done in an hour, so we'll see. But that's on Saturday, so that should be fun. We're going with Liz and Alan, daughter and son-in-law. My wife and I are going with Liz and Alan, daughter and son-in-law, and then another couple from their church as well. So it should be fun. It's like at 2:00 in the afternoon, something like that, on Saturday. But because of that, I've been working along trying to get ahead, because I knew basically half of Saturday was going to get cut off. And I'm doing just fine. I actually put down 3,000 words on Sunday. 3,000 words written and a first pass in editing done on them. So that meant I could jump in, which is a lot. I only have 1,000 words scheduled for Sundays, but I actually got 3,000 words in on this Sunday. And then on Mondays, I have 750, and I got 1,700 words in. So, I mean, I'm cranking. If I get some good wordage down this evening, I'm going to be really close to my 7,500 words even before I start tomorrow. And then tomorrow I can just power through, get them done, and then get whatever I can done on Saturday. At this point, I still don't know exactly how this book ends. Well, I do kind of, I know kind of where I'm going, but I don't know quite what the sequence is. And I still have somewhere around another 100 pages to write. But I've got the epilogue, and the epilogue's probably going to be about 10 pages. So I really only have about 90 pages to write, and I've got several things to do and get done yet, so I don't think the 90's going to be a problem. I'm trying to not overwrite like I did on the second one. The second one was too long. It was too long. It was 150,000 words, which that's too long. The first one was 117, so I'm really trying to land this somewhere around 125. I figure if I can land it around 125, you know, that's good enough. That's good enough, and we can move on to the next book. But, so I don't quite have the ending under control yet. I know what the epilogue is going to be, so that's going to be good. And that's going to be fun to write. So we'll see. We'll see. Like I said, I know the pieces, I just don't have it yet. So theoretically, if I can do 7,500 words a week, and I am currently at, I think it's 88,000 words, and I'm trying to get to 125, means I got about 30 to 35,000, theoretically, I could have this thing roughed in 4 to 5 weeks, which would be great. Because that would put me a couple of weeks from, well, put me mid-August sometime, which I could maybe get to beta then on it on September the 15th. For sure by October the 1st, which is actually my goal. So I'm pretty excited at this point to see how this see how this thing is actually going to end. Because sometimes I don't know till I get there. Which is a weird thing about writing. It's just weird. This book has already taken a number of little turns here and there that I didn't know were coming up. And that's always fun when that happens. Some cute stuff in it. Just some cute stuff. Nice scenes. I'm enjoying it. Anyways, so this week, I came across a TED Talk, and I do not talk about this to just make people mad, although there probably would be some cause to get mad if you let this sort of thing bother you. But when you realize this is just the way of the flesh and what the flesh does when left to itself, and it is entirely predictable, about all you can do is say, well, you know, if you're not going to recognize the flesh and how it would move people in these circumstances, then I guess you deserve to just have this happen. The title of the TED Talk was How This FBI Strategy Is Actually Creating U.S.-Based Terrorists. And the guy who gave the TED Talk, his name was Trevor Aronson. And it was pretty interesting. He started out by saying that the FBI is responsible for more terrorism plots in the United States than any other organization. He said more than Al-Qaeda, more than Al-Shabaab, more than the Islamic State, more than all of them combined. Now, that's quite a daring statement, bombastic statement. Though he seems to have the evidence to back it up. And how this happened was, you had 9/11 there. And he said after 9/11, the FBI came less concerned with gangsters and crooked elected officials. And their target, their new main focus, became terrorists. We have to pursue terrorists in the United States. Pursue terrorists. Well, he said every year the Bureau spends $3.3 billion $3.2 billion on domestic counterterrorism activities. Whereas they only spend $2.6 billion combined for organized crime, financial fraud, public corruption, and all other types of traditional criminal activity. So you bucket everything else up, it comes to $2.6 billion for criminal activities, and the FBI is spending $3.3 billion a year on domestic counterterrorism. Now you might wonder, where is all that money going? Well, this speaker on the TED Talk said that he has spent years poring through the case files of terrorism prosecutions in the United States. And he said he's come to the conclusion that the FBI is much better at creating terrorists than it is at catching terrorists. Another bold statement. He said, in the 14 years since 9/11, you can count about 6 real terrorist attacks in the United States. So these include the Boston Marathon bombings, 2013, as well as failed attacks, such as the time when a man named Faisal Shahzad tried to deliver a car bomb to Times Square. He said, in those same 14 years, however, the Bureau has bragged about how it has foiled dozens of terrorism plots. He said, in all, the FBI arrested more than 175 people in aggressive, undercover, counter-terrorism stings. Now, that's pretty impressive. 175 people in aggressive counter-terrorism stings. Here's how that happened, according to this guy. After 9/11, the FBI was told, never again. Okay? You are never to allow another attack on American soil. The FBI was told, you are supposed to find the terrorists before they strike. So to do this, the FBI recruited a network of more than 15,000 informants nationwide, all looking for anyone that might be dangerous. Bear in mind that an informant can earn $100,000 or more for every terrorism case they bring to the FBI. You can earn $100,000 by bringing a terrorism case to the FBI. So the FBI is paying mostly criminals and con men six figures to spy on the communities in the United States, but mostly Muslim American communities. Now, you really should be able to figure out where this is going just with that information. When you are paying people $100,000 per case, and you are of the ilk, shall we say, of someone who is less concerned about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, you can imagine what might happen. And in fact, these informants nab people, and the guy who was doing the talk gave some names that I'm not going to do well with. Abu Khalid Abdul Latif and Wali Mujahid. The thing of it is both of these guys are mentally ill. The first guy had a history of huffing gasoline. Huffing is when you smell gasoline fumes to get high. And attempting suicide. The second guy had schizoaffective disorder, and he had trouble distinguishing reality and fantasy. And yet, in 2012, the FBI arrested these two men for conspiring to attack a military recruiting station outside Seattle with weapons that were provided, of course, by the FBI. So, the informant, according to this guy who's giving the talk, was a man named Robert Childs. According to this guy, Robert Childs is a convicted rapist and child molester who was paid $90,000 for his work on the case. And according to this guy who gave the talk, this is not unusual. He said, in 2009, an FBI informant who had fled Pakistan on murder charges led four men in a plot to bomb synagogues in the Bronx. The lead defendant was James Cromartie. He was a flat broke Walmart employee with history of mental problems. One moment, I'm getting my mail. And the informant offered him $250,000 if he participated in the plot. So, you have people who are going to earn money if they can get other people to act like terrorists. And these people go to people with a history of mental problems and promise them $250,000 if you're willing to participate in this terrorist plot. And the people go, yeah, sure. Okay, yeah. So, he said today, the guy giving the story, he said there was The Intercept, which is some kind of news outlet, he said, they published my story about a counterterrorism sting in Tampa involving someone named Sammy Osmakak. He also had a schizoaffective disorder. He too was broke. He had zero connection to international terrorist groups. Nonetheless, an FBI informant gives him a job, hands him money, introduces him to an undercover agent posing as a terrorist, lures him into a plot to bomb an Irish bar. Backing into my garage one moment. So basically, this informant, knowing that he's going to get paid potentially six figures, goes out and finds a guy who has no job, history of mental problems, gives him a job, pays him some money, gets on his good side, and then says, hey, you need to maybe talk to this guy, you know, who's with the FBI. And this FBI agent is then posing as a terrorist, a lead terrorist, and this lead terrorist, FBI agent, recruits the dead broke guy with the schizoaffective disorder. Oh, man. Problem was, is this lead undercover agent went back to the field office with his recording equipment still on. And behind closed doors, the FBI agents admit that what they're doing is farcical. The reporter who's giving a talk said, a federal judge doesn't want you to hear these conversations. He sealed the transcript and placed them under a protective order in an attempt to prevent someone like me from doing something like this. Apparently, this guy got him somehow. Behind closed doors, the lead agent, the squad supervisor, described their would-be terrorist as, quote, okay, this is the direct quote, quote, a retarded fool who didn't have a pot to piss in. They described his terrorist ambitions as wishy-washy and a pipe dream scenario. But of course, that didn't stop the FBI. So they provide this guy, Sammy Osmakak, everything he needed. They gave him a car bomb. They gave him an AK-47. They make him helped him make a so-called martyrdom video. They even gave him money for a taxi cab so he get work, so he could get to where they wanted him to go. And as they were working the sting, the squad supervisor tells his agents that he wants a Hollywood ending. And he got a Hollywood ending. When Sammy Osmakak attempted to deliver what he thought was a car bomb, he was arrested, convicted, and sentenced to 40 years in prison. He is one of the 175 so-called terrorists for whom the FBI has created holiday endings. The claim that the reporter made in the TED Talk is the United States government officials call this the war on terror when it's really just theater, a national security theater with mentally ill men like Sammy Osmakak, unwitting actors in a carefully choreographed production brought to you by the FBI. So, you know, a moderator came up afterwards and said, wow, these are some pretty strong accusations. Can you back this up? And basically he said, I did all this research. And he said, I've gone back to the FBI and said, here's my research. This is what I've found. What's your reaction? He said, they have no reaction. He said, we gave them the opportunity to say these findings are wrong. He said, they've never come forward even to say there are problems with the findings. He said, so the data has been used by groups like Human Rights Watch on its recent report of these types of sting operations. He said, so far the FBI has never really responded to these charges, and it's really not catching terrorists so much as it is catching mentally ill people, so it can dress them up as terrorists in their types of sting operations. Now then, again, does this surprise anyone? Well, we hold these noble ideas that the people who are in charge, the people who enforce the laws, are somehow have this sense of right and wrong that guides them all the time. But in fact, they are flesh-filled too. They have been given an edict. Their existence depends on this edict. Make sure that we are making arrests and stopping terrorist plots. They are getting billions of dollars from the United States government to ensure that. And every notch on their belt ensures they will continue to get their funding. So it doesn't really surprise me at all, knowing how the flesh works, that the FBI officials would be doing this. Nor does it surprise me at all that if the FBI is going to hang out $100,000 on the end of a stick to anyone who's willing to lead them to a terrorist, nor does it surprise me that people go around and target mentally ill people that can be bent to their will and will do what they're told. Because this is simple. The informants are going to go out and find those people, convince them of what they're supposed to be doing, even if they have to hire them and pay them $1,000 for a week worth of work, because then they can set them up and they can make $100,000. I mean, it's sad. It's very sad. But it is flesh. And this is exactly what happens when you move forward and you do not have an understanding of what the flesh is going to do in people and how easily predictable people's reactions are going to be when subjected to certain circumstances. If you base people's jobs on the fact that they have to get results, they'll get results. If you base people's pay on the fact that they have to get results, they'll get results. If you base people's funding on the fact that you have to get results, they'll get results. If you pay them lots of money to get results, they will get results. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.